All right, Rabbi, we'll say good morning. Let us begin. Today's daf is Kuf Yud Zayin 117. We are picking up at the Mishnah on Kuf Tes Zayin 116b. Baruch Hashem, a lot to do today. I want to thank our sponsors. I thank Howard and Aileen Friedman for dedicating the Learning Today memory of Howard's sister, Fega Pessel, Bas Shalom, Zichron Livracha. We hope that in the merit of our Tamar Torah, her neshama have an aliyah, and the family a nechama. And also with that, let us begin. Really incredible Gemara today. She says the Mishnah, 116b, first wide line. Says the Mishnah, Matzilim tikka sefer ima sefer. You can go ahead and save the tikka sefer. Now, the tik represents a receptacle, right? The receptacle, literally a box. But this is a receptacle in which you go ahead and house the Sefer Torah or the scroll. So the Mishnah is now telling me that halacha l'maisa, I am permitted to go ahead and save the scroll together with the box in which it is housed. V'tikha tefillin ima tefillin. So too, again, I could go ahead and save tefillin together with the box in which the tefillin is stored. Now, boss, what's the chiddush? V'af api shish b'sochan mos. Even if there's money in the receptacle. So we'll say, so let's say for argument's sake, in the box or in the receptacle in which I store the Sefer Torah, there's also money in it. There's also money. Or the same thing with tefillin. There's money in the receptacle in which I store the tefillin. So the halacha is, I could save the receptacle together with the sefer, even though halacha l'maaseh, there is money in the receptacle. L'heichan matzilin also. And I will say, in general, when we say you're permitted to save it. So where are you permitted to go ahead and take it out to? To which the Gemara says, l'mavoy she'enu mafulosh. Even to a mavui that's not mufulash. Now we'll see what this term means. Really an Erevin concept. But mufulash we'll see really means like open. We'll discuss what that means in the Gemara. So Ben Besera says, Afla mufulash. So the first opinion says you could go ahead and transport the sefer or the tefillin to a mavui which is not open. The second opinion says, even to a mavui that is open. Good. So let's analyze. So we're going to focus now on the first part. The chiddush being, the idea being that halacha l'maaseh are permitted. So there's two elements here. Number one, that you're permitted to go ahead and save the receptacle, the box, right, in the container in which the Sefer Torah is stored along with the Sefer itself. That's idea number one. And idea number two is that even if there's money inside of that container, you're still permitted to move it on Shabbos in order to save it. So it says the Gemara Tan Rabbanan, Arbas HaShachalios B'Shabbos Mavshitin HaSapesach HaDachoze. What's an interesting case? What happens if Pesach falls out on Erev Shabbos? Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos. So we'll say, so remember again, this represents a unique idea here, because halacha l'maaseh, you're supposed to shecht the Korban Pesach on Erev Pesach. In this case over here, Erev Pesach is Shabbos. So remember again, you need to shecht the Pesach, but interestingly enough, you're going to be shechting a Korban that cannot be consumed until Matzeh Shabbos, which is the first night of Pesach. So the shaila now is, how do you go ahead and prepare that Paschal lamb, that Korban Pesach, on Shabbos? So Rabbi Shmuel says, "Mafshitin es haPesach haDachaze." You can go ahead and flay the animal. So what's this? Remember again, Rashi points out, they would hang the animal ultimately again from his hind legs, and they would begin skinning the animal from the hind legs, working their way down. So Rabbi Shmuel says, you can go ahead and flay the animal up until its chest, but you can't flay the rest of the animal. Says the Gemara. So Divrei Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch. The Chum say mafshitin es kula. Chum say no, you could skin the entire animal. Says the Gemara. Let's analyze. What's the machlokes? The Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch. The has avir leitzarach kavah. So what's the idea of Rabbi Shmuel's position? Why can you only flay it until the chest? Because if you flay the animal, remove the hide until the chest, that allows you to go ahead and remove all the sacrificial parts. So once you can get out all the sacrificial parts, you're good to go. There's nothing more that you really need to do. El Rabbanon, my time, but why do the Rabbanon allow you to flay the entire animal? Amra Barabachan, Amra Yochran, the Amrakra, call Paul Hashan Lamaneu. Because they will say, they quote a pasuk that says, everything you do should be for the sake of Hashem. Okay. What that sounds like, the way the Gemara is understanding that to mean is that when you do something for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do it in a beautiful fashion. Or I should say, do it in the most beautiful fashion you can. So says the Gemara, okay, what does that mean practically though? So v'hacha ma'ila ma'aneu iko. So we'll say what the Rabbanu seem to be saying is, you should flay the animal in its entirety, because that's a nicer way to go ahead and prepare the carbon. So the Gemara says, why is that nicer? Rav Yosef says, because that ensures that the meat will not spoil. So apparently after you shecht an animal, if you leave the hide on the meat, it causes the meat to heat up and to decay. So therefore, the Rabbanan say you should flay the entire animal. This way, again, you do not accelerate the decaying of the meat. Rava Amarava says, Rava says, it just doesn't look nice. Right? This is a carbon, and it's going to be partially flayed, partially unflayed. It doesn't look nice. It looks like it's a carcass of an animal just sitting around. Therefore, it's important that you go ahead and treat the animal with respect. Come with respect. So we'll say, so what's the nafkamina between these two opinions? It's very simple. Let's say you place the animal on a golden table. So we'll say, so according to Rava, who says that leaving the animal partially unflayed, you know, doesn't look nice for the carbon. If it's sitting on a gold table, it's clear that you're treating this carbon with respect, right? Inami, but also on the other hand, that would not do anything to prevent decaying of the meat. Inami yoma di istana. Or the other possibility I will say is that it's a cool day or a cooler day with the wind. Right? The idea being that I will say if it's a cool day with the wind, see, even if the hide remains on the meat won't decay. Okay, says the Gemara of Rabbi Shmuel, Benot Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, Hi, Kol Pal Hashem L'Maneu, my Avedle. I suppose it's according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, what does he do with this pasuk of Kol Pal Hashem L'Maneu? How does he understand ultimately again? How does he understand? Remember again, this is Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka who says that you only have to flay the animal up until the chest. So what does he do with this pasuk that seems to indicate that you should serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a beautiful way? He says this teaches us that you should not remove sacrificial parts before you flay the animal. Or Rabbi say, technically speaking, after you shech the animal, you could remove sacrificial parts right then and there. How? Just make a cut inside the hide, right, and remove whatever you need to remove. So, Kol Pal Hashem L'Maneu, whatever you do for HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be for His sake, which means perform, the way the Gemara is understanding it over here, is when you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do it in a beautiful way. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka says, it teaches me that Halacha L'Maaseh said, don't remove sacrificial parts from the animal before you flay the animal. To which the Gemara says, my time, what's the reason for that? Because of hairs. The concern is, Rabbi said, that if you're making an incision in the hide and pulling out the sacrificial parts like that, the sacrificial parts may get stuck on a hair of the animal and may rupture. So at the end of the day, what did they answer back to Rabbi Yishmael? This is what they said. So we'll say this is very interesting. Apparently what the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka was as follows. If on Shabbos you're allowed to save the container of the Sefer Torah with the Sefer Torah, should we not be permitted to go ahead and skin the Pesach in its entirety? The Rabbi will say, now what is that argument? Take a look at Rashi. In the last couple of short lines in Rashi, in Matzilin b'Shabbos tikim ha-sefer, va'afa pishish b'socho ma'os, umishum kavad ha-sefer, shulitzor ha-kavo, avdina b'hedja, hatzalas ma'os shehin z'tzor ha-chedyo. So we'll say, if on Shabbos, you're allowed to save the container of the Sefer Torah together with the Sefer Torah, even though what? Even though there's money inside the Sefer Torah, if that in fact is permitted, says the Gemara, then what? Lo nafshit es ha-pesach mi'aro. Look at Rashi. Bitmiya, mishum tzorah kavah lo shari tzorah chayas. We'll say, what the chum said to Rabbi Yochanan, to Rabbi Shmuel is like this. You know, if you're allowed to go ahead and save a container of a Sefer Torah together with the Sefer Torah, even though there's money in that Sefer, so you can't flay the entire carbon Pesach? Does that even make sense? You can't flay the entire carbon Pesach? Of course you should be able to. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand, me, dummy, what's the comparison? Hasam, tiltal, hacha, malacha. I will say, one is an issue of mukza, which is dirabbanan, and flaying, however, is one of the lamatas malachas. Right? Again, it's mamish a bona fide malachas. How can you compare the two? Amravashi, betarti pligi. In reality, they're arguing in two things. Pligi b'tiltul, pligi b'malacha. They argue regarding carrying, regarding tiltul, and they argue regarding malacha. Vachi kamrele, this is what they said to Rabbi Shmuel. Ima tzilin tik ima sefer, ima tzilin tik sefer ima sefer, lo netalta or agav basar. If you're permitted to save the receptacle of the Torah, even when there's money in it, ultimately, again, because the sefer is there, should you not be permitted to remove the hide when it's on top of the meat? Type of kuf yud zayin. Again, meat dummy. The Gemara says, how can you compare these cases? Hasam nasis basis ladavar hamutar. Hacha nasis basis ladavar ha'asr. In the case of the sefer Torah in the container is a basis, is a base, is something that is permitted. And interestingly enough, in the case of the Korban Pesach, the meat is a base for something that is asr. Now, Bosu, I should say, the hide is a base of something that is asr. I'll say why, because the meat of the Korban Pesach is technically asr on Shabbos. Not technically, it's asr on Shabbos. Why? Because you can't consume Korban Pesach, remember, until Matzei Shabbos, which is Pesach. Elohachi ka'amrle. Rather, this is what they said to him. Imatzilin tikshal sefer. Ima sefer. If you're allowed on Shabbos to save the container of a Sefer Torah, together with the Sefer Torah, even though there's money inside of the container, afa pishish besocho ma'os, lo netaltel or agav basar, should you not be permitted to go ahead and remove the hide which is sitting on top of the meat? To which the Gemara says, again, mi dummy, hasam nasis basas ladavar ha'asr, uladavar ha'mutar. In the case of the container of the Sefer Torah, we'll say, then what? The container is considered to be a base to something that is mutter and asr. Remember again, the mutter item is the Sefer Torah. The asr item is the money. In general, we'll say, remember from Hilchos Muksa, whenever you have something that is a basis, a base, to something that is mutter and asr, you are permitted to move it on Shabbos. Halcha, by the case of the hide, kulo na'aseh basis ledavar ha'asr. Again, I will say, in the case of the hide, in the case of the Korban Pesach, so the basis, the item is a base to only something that is asr. Because remember, again, the meat of the Korban Pesach is not consumable on Shabbos. Elohachi kamerle. Rather, this is what they meant to say. Emevien tik shiyesh besocho ma'os mi'almo lehatzlebo sefer Torah lo netaltel or agav basar. So I'll say, so now they're changing. So now the Chachamim are changing their approach a little bit. They said, Rabbi Shmuel, is it not true that you would be permitted to go ahead and bring a container? See, we'll say, up until now, when we're speaking about the case of the container, the way we visualize it is how you have a Sefer Torah in a container, right? It's already in the container. But inside that same container is money. So now the chiddush of the Mishnah is, I don't have to go ahead and take the sefer out from the container. Rather, I could take the container with the sefer in it, even though there's money inside of it. So I'll say, remember, the halachic rationale of that is very simple. The halachic rationale is because the container itself is a basis, ledavar ha'asr, davar ha'mutar. It is a base, ultimately, again, to that which is permitted and that which is prohibited. And the halacha is, you on Shabbos, you're permitted to move an item that is a base, that is a basis, ledavar ha'asr and ledavar ha'mutar. That's the halachic logic of it. So now Chacham is saying, is it not true? Is it not true that if there was a Sefer Torah in the house, and the house is burning, that I could bring a receptacle from elsewhere, a container from elsewhere, to the home, to put the Sefer Torah in it, in order to transport the Sefer Torah, even though the container I'm transporting happens to have money inside of the container? To which the Gemara says, and if that's the case, why should you not be able to remove the hide off of the entire Paschal lamb? To which the Gemara says, v'hi gufa minalan. And the Gemara says, but one second, where do you know that from? That you can go ahead and bring a receptacle from elsewhere, even though the receptacle has money in it, in order to put the Sefer Torah in it, in order to save it? To which the Gemara says, ilema temidehecha de isbe lo shadi lehu asuye nami maisinon. So I say, so maybe you'll say, well, since ultimately, again, if you have the receptacle in front of you with the Sefer, we don't make you empty out the money first before you transport the receptacle with the Torah. Therefore, again, we could assume, therefore, that what? You could transport the container from another location, even though there's money inside of it as well. To which the Gemara says, that's not true. Midami, hasam, Adahachi Bahachi Nafla Deleika. So we'll say where the fire is in the home and the Sefer Torah is in the container. We're not going to start forcing you or asking you to go and empty the money from the container before you transport the Sefer Torah out, because the goal is get the Sefer out of the house before everything burns. To which the Gemara says, but Adahachi Bahachi Lishtinan. We'll say if indeed you are transporting a container from location A to location B, the fire is in location B, then the truth is, as you're transporting the container, empty out the money. I was supposed to say, the Gemara says, your approach is flawed. Just because we allow you to go ahead and transport the container with the safer in it, even though there's money inside of that container right now inside of the house, yes, we don't make you shake out the money first. Why? Because time is of the essence. But if you're transporting a container ordered from another location to the home where there's a fire, in order to put the safe in order to save the safer, that means you have time during transport. In Achinami, shake out the money. Shake out the money. To which the Gemara says, Allah Amar Mar Barav Ashi, the Olam Kidarmina Meyakara. Rather, says the Gemara, let's go back for a second. The Machlokis is as we mentioned before. Right? The Machlokis, Rabbi Shmuel, and the Chachamim, is regarding how far or how much of the Karban Pesach you are permitted to flay when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos. Rabbi Shmuel telling you up until the chest, the Chum saying the entire animal. I, Vide Kashi Lecha Hacha, Hacha Tziltzol, B'Hacha Malacha. I, but you said again, then when we tried to compare the two cases, right, the Rabbi will say ultimately again, the case of Shabbos, of carrying the tick, carrying the container with the money inside of it to the Karban Pesach, and you said, how can you compare the cases? After all, again, one is carrying Muktzah, which is Dirabanan, and the flaying of the animal ultimately again is a doraisa. Kegom delo kabay le'la'ar. But say the case of the flaying is where you don't need the hide. So because you don't need the hide, therefore again it's not really a malacha. To which the Gemara says, really? Even if you don't need the hide, if you're flaying an animal and there is a hide, so you say that's called a psikresha. So remember again, psikresha means that what? There's a machlokes by Dabar Shein Miskavin, right? The malacha shein tzricha legufa. So if you do a malacha and you don't, and you don't have in mind for the consequences, fine. There's a tzad. There's a side to say that you're putter. But lemaisa, if you do something that will definitively result in a malacha, everyone agrees that you're chayiv. And by flaying the animal, even if you don't want the hide, are you not doing something that definitively results in malacha? To which the Gemara says, "Deshakil le bebarzi." So what are you doing? You're removing the hide in strips. So because you're removing the hide in strips, therefore again, there's no real benefit to be gained from the hide, and therefore halacha lamaisa, one would not be chayiv for such an act. Okay, so I'll say, so that indeed is the machlokes ultimately again between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. Sorry, Rabbi Shmuel and the Chachamim. Just you should know, the Rambam paskins like the Chachamim that halacha lamaisa, When Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, they would go ahead and flay the entire animal on Shabbos. Not just up until the chest, but they in fact would flay the animal in its entirety. Good. Ulehechem Atzilin. So we'll say, remember again, the halacha, I just want to point out, the core halacha that's being mentioned here was not debated in the Mishnah. In other words, everyone agrees that halacha lemaisa, when you're saving a sefer, you're saving a scroll. So remember again, in our last sugya, so we discussed what type of scroll you are permitted to save. Now that we've established that, our Mishnah adds in, not only can you save the scroll, but what? You can also go ahead and save the container in which the scroll is sitting. And not only that, but even if there's money in that container, you could still save that container with the scroll inside of it. Good. So then the next part of the Mishnah is, okay, and where can you transport this? You're both saying, the assumption over here is, not the assumption, the fire is in, we'll call Reuven, right? For Reuven, the fire is in his house. So he's got to get this item out of his house. So where is he, how far is he permitted to take this? So remember, that's the machlokes on the Mishnah. First opinion of the Mishnah, lemavui she'ena mafulash, to a mavui which is not opened. Again, we'll define what that means in just a moment. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira said, even to an open mavui, says the Gemara, heichi dami mafulash, heichi dami she'ena mafulash. What does it mean, an open mavui and a not open mavui? Rav Chisda, here we go. Shalosh mechitzos u'shnei lechayin, zeu mavui she'ena mafulash. Rav Chisda says, if you have a mavui, and I will say, just to define our terms, a mavui is an alleyway. So remember again, we know that in Talmudic times, the way their homes were set up was as follows. You had multiple homes that opened up into a shared chatzar, a shared courtyard. So if you could imagine a whole number of courtyards, those courtyards opened up into a shared alleyway. That alleyway is called a mavui. And a mavui often opened up into a rishus harabim, a public domain. So you've got homes that open up into courtyards, courtyards that open up into alleyways, alleyways that kind of feed into the public domain. So obviously we'll say, this is going to be an Erev in Sugya, but just to give you the kind of the cliff notes on it, which is that halacha lemaisa, Chazal were very concerned when it came to a mavui, that people would confuse a mavoi with a rishus harabim. Because a mavoi kind of looks like, remember again, a mavoi in alleyway, this is where you have like a lot of people from different chatziros converging on this area. Remember, a mavoi is not a rishus harabim. It is not, but it looks like one. Because of that, Chazal ordered that you do certain things to your mavoi to remind people that although carrying is permitted in a mavoi, it's not permitted in the rishus harabim. So we'll discuss what you have to do. So there's either a lechi or a korah, a horizontal beam, a vertical beam, that are this just there to serve as a reminder. So for example, Rav Chisda says, what is considered to be a closed mavoi? See, he says, if it has three mechitzas, three walls, ushnein lechayin, two lechis. Right, two lechis. So we'll say, a lechi would be a beam or a piece of wood that you would put by the side posts, right, of the entranceway, exit of the mavui. They would be there to serve as a reminder that this area is a mavui and the new area is a rishus harabim. So the Gemara says, if chista shalosh mechitzos ushnei lechayim, zeh mavui shenu mefulosh, gimel mechitzos v'lechi echa, but if you have three mechitzos and only one lechi, that is an open mavoi. V'tarvayu aliba de Rabbi Eliezer. And I will say, ultimately, again, both opinions are going according to Rabbi Eliezer. This nan, because we learned, Heksher mavoi. I will say, how do you make a mavoi fit for carrying? Beishamai omer lechi bekorah. Beishamai says you need both a lechi and a korah, right? A beam going down and a beam going across. Beisilo omrim o lechi o korah. Beisilo says, no, you either need a lechi, a side post, or a korah, or a beam, I call it a beam, but it really just means a piece of wood, that goes across the entranceway. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Shnei Lechayim. Rabbi Eliezer says, in order for a mavui to be fit for carrying, you need two lechis, two side post beams. Amar Li Rabba, Gimel Mechitzos V'lechi Echad Mifuleshes Karisle. So Rabbi says, one second, if you have a mavui that has three mechitzos and one lechi, that's considered to be an open mavui? Vaot, furthermore, the Rabbanan Natsila Socha Ochlin Amashkin. Why would the Rabbanan only permit you to go ahead and what? And move into here a Sefer Torah with this container? Remember again, you should be able to move into here Ochlin Amashkin, food and drink as well. Because we'll say at the end of the day by Ochlin Amashkin, again, these are different sugyas which we will get into. If you look at Rashi, Natsila Socha Af Ochlin Amashkin, Kimo Lechotra Me'ureves. So we'll say, so remember again, when it comes to the saving of food, which we'll discuss, that's our next Mishnah, when it comes to the saving of food, the Mishnah allows you to take it into a chatzar that has an Erev, right? But yet, it doesn't seem to allow you to take it into a closed mavui. So I don't understand, if you're permitted to save a Sefer Torah with this container into this type of closed mavui, why would you not be permitted to transport food and drink into there as well? Rather, Rabbi says like this, if you have a mavui that has two mechitzos, two partitions, and two lechis, that is considered to be a mavui that is not open. However, shtei mechitzos v'lechi echad, but if you have two mechitzos and only one lechi, then zehu mavui hamafulash. That is considered to be an open mavui. V'tarvayu aliba de Rabbi Yehuda. And both of these approaches reflect the view of Rabbi Yehuda. Desanya, yaser alkein, om Rabbi Yehuda, mishyesh lo shnei batim mishnei tidir shesarabim. Also, you've seen this case before, that if a person has two homes on two sides, right, across the street from shesarabim. So it says two homes on two sides of the Rosh Sarabim, with the Rosh Sarabim dividing between them. What's the halacha? O se lechi mikan v'lechi mikan. You make a lechi on one side, a lechi on the other side. O korah mikan v'korah mikan. Or a korah, which we'll say is the beam that goes across on one side, a korah on the other side. And then you could carry in between the two homes. Then Shavuos like converting the Rishus HaRabim into a Rishus HaYochid. Amr lo, they said to him, no, ein ma'arvin Rishus HaRabim mekach. That does not work. You cannot make it. You cannot privatize a Rishus HaRabim like that. Amr le Abai le didach, nami de Rabbanon, nasi l'socho ochlu namashkin. So Abai said to him, but again, according to you, according to the Rabbanon, why, again, if that's the definition of a mavui sheinu mefulash, that's fine. So your definition of mavui sheinu mefulash ultimately is what? Two mechises and two lechis. Fine. But that should be enough to be able to save food and drink into that area as well. Yet, why does the Mishnah not allow that? Ella Amud Bezerbo say, Ella Amar Avashi, Shalosh mechitzos v'lechi echad, zem mavui sheinu mefulash. Rather, says Avashi as follows. Three mechitzos and one lechi, that is considered to be a closed mavui. Gimu mechitzos below lechi, three mechitzos without any lechi, ze mavoi hamafulash. That ultimately, again, is an open mavoi. V'afil Rabbi Eliezer, d'amar ba'ina lechayim, and even Rabbi Eliezer says that you need two lechis, hani mili le'ochlin u'mashkin. That's only for food and drink. Avala sefer Torah, b'chad lechi sagi. But to transport a sefer Torah with this container, all you need ultimately is what? Three mechitzas and one lechi. And I will say that is indeed the definition that the Rambam accepts for this purpose as well, that the type of mavui for which you would be permitted to go ahead and transport a Sefer Torah together with its container would be a closed mavui. And the definition of a closed mavui is three mechitzas and one lechi. Again, I will say, we will see these sugyas in Erevin, again, because they're much more complicated than obviously what we're getting into now. But Lamaisa, just to understand what we're saying is as follows. We're going to see, again, this will make a bit more sense when you see the next Mishnah. So what we've established is as follows. Number one, you could save a scroll from a fire on Shabbos. We saw in the last sugya definition of a sefer is 85 letters, minimum of 85 letters. Okay, we saw various other halachos concerning Sfarim, reading Ksuvim, not reading Ksuvim. This mission introduces us to the idea that not only can you save the Sefer, but you could save the container in which houses the Sefer. And even if there's money in that container, you can still save the container ultimately again with the Sefer. You're running out of the house, burning house with the Sefer. Where can you take the Sefer? The furthest you could take it is to a closed mavoi. So you can go out of your house, into the chatzar, leave the chatzar and go into the mavui, as long as the mavui is quote-unquote closed, in a mafulash. And what is the definition of a closed mavui for these purposes? Three mechitzas, three walls, or three barriers, and one lechi. Good. Now, so we get to an incredible sugya. Mishnah. Matzilin mazin gimel sudas harei la'adam. So listen to this. Shot, still fire. I'll say just as an aside, I have to thank Bennett Goldberg. Bennett sent me an incredible clip, a dramatic news story actually, that I think it was from yesterday, that there was a fire in a home in Boca Raton, Rahman al-Slan, the family, Bakshon Zakir, Jewish family. The house was destroyed. They lost all their possessions. They were able to get one thing out of the house, a Sefer Torah. The family had a 100-year-old Sefer Torah that the firemen were able to get out of the house. And they interviewed the firemen on the news, and he was saying he couldn't believe it, that there was no water damage, nothing to the Sefer. Right? They showed the Sefer, and there was mamish, and Ben sent this to me. Incredible that here we're going ahead, we're doing this sugya, and mamish again. Unfortunately for this mishpach, halacha lemaisa, but incredible that a whole home, you saw the fire, mamish ravaged everything, yet the Sefer Torah came out intact. And really, pretty incredible. So we'll say, so the Mishnah goes on. It says, Matzilin mazin gimel su'udos. So same thing with the fire. Then obviously we're talking about saving food. So let's say Chas Hashem, a fire breaks out in the home. What are you permitted to go ahead and carry out of the home in terms of food? So the halach is, you're allowed to save three meals worth of food. That's the halacha. Three meals worth of food. Says the Imam, Harei la'adam la'adam, Harei la'behema la'behema. What is food that is fit for people, and food that is fit for animals, for animals. And I want to be clear. The three seudos worth of food is obviously a din in people, right? I have a din on Shabbos, as we're going to discuss, of Shalashadis. or shalosh su'udos, right? I have a din of eating three meals on Shabbos, right? So therefore, again, halacha l'maaseh, if a fire breaks out in the house, I'm permitted to save three meals worth of food. In addition to that, I'm also permitted to save food for my animal. How much food for my animal? As much food as my animal needs for Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Ketzad. So what's the example of this? Nafla deleika b'leile Shabbos. If chas v'shalom a fire breaks out on Friday evening, right, Friday night, matzilin mazon gimel su'udos. So we'll say, so the assumption over here is the fire breaks out before you have the su'udah on Shabbos night. So you could save three meals worth of food. B'shachris. Let's say chas v'shalom, the fire breaks out Shabbos morning. Matzilin mazon beis su'udos. You could save two meals worth of food. B'mincha. Let's say the fire breaks out Shabbos afternoon. Mazon su'dachos. You could save one meal's worth of food. So what's I say? The idea that the Mishnah is saying is, Tanakhama is saying that the license to save three meals worth of food is a maximum. But obviously it will depend on what point in time in Shabbos the fire breaks out. Right? So the fire breaks out before you've had any su'udos, you could save three meals worth of food. But as you have your su'udos, you are not permitted to save the amount of food necessary for a su'udah that has already occurred. Conversely, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Li'olam Matzilin Mazon Shalosh Su'udos. But on the other hand, Rabbi Yossi holds, no. When Chazal said that you could save three meals worth of food on Shabbos, that was an objective amount, no matter when the fire breaks out on Shabbos. Halacha l'maisa is where the fire breaks out Friday night, where the fire breaks out Shabbos afternoon, l'maisa, you're always permitted to go ahead and save three meals worth of food. Good. Says the Gemara, Michti betera katarach neitzel tvi. I don't understand. We'll say food isn't mukta. My food is a mukta, so why can't I save as much food as I want? In other words, why is there a cap on the amount of food that I am permitted to save from a burning house? Right, suppose, you know, when there's a house on fire, so some people run in to save other people, some people run in to save food. Right, so, you know, so the mice, everything depends on, you know, I should say, you know, hatsalas nefashas looks differently for different people. So the mice says, the Gemara, I understand, food is not mukta. So why is there a cap? Why is there a cap on saving three meals worth of food? I should be able to save as much as I can or as much as I want. Or we'll say, this is really amazing. So Amarava, mitoch sha'adam bohol amamono, isharis le'asi le'chabuye. We'll say, what are we concerned about? We're concerned that when a person, chas v'shalom, sees a fire breaking out in their home, so what could happen? A person becomes so overwhelmed and so concerned about the loss of money, the loss of possessions, that if we don't give them a framework, they will simply come to extinguish the fire. That's what happens when a person is overwhelmed by something. They forget about halacha. They forget about rules. They forget about a construct or a framework. So in order to ensure that a person doesn't come to extinguish the fire on Shabbos, we give them limitations in terms of what they're going to say. Also, I just want to say, just as an aside, you know, we've begun to see this already, that it's fascinating that Chazal are presupposing that if a fire does not break out in your, if a fire breaks out in your home, Chazal are telling us what you're allowed to save. But it's interesting that it's clear that they're also indicating that you are not permitted to put out the fire in your home. So just to obviously understand that the context of that halacha, that is assuming that when the fire breaks out in your home, that the ramifications are only financial, right? So the greatest loss that could happen, chas v'shalom, is to one's money. Obviously, if there's a threat to life, it goes without saying that, of course, halacha l'maaseh, you could put out the fire. Which is why, for example, Shmir Shabbos, let's bring down like today. So in today's day and age, when we have electricity and we have gas lines, so if a fire breaks out in your home, you put it out. You put it out because every single fire is considered to be sakanas nefashas. But again, if you think about it, in the times of Chazal, if a person was living in a bit more of a remote area, so chas v'shalom, a fire breaks out in my home, what's the worst case scenario over here? The house burns down. Everybody's out. It's heartbreaking. It's difficult. But l'maisa, the ramifications are only financial. So in those situations, Chazal said, okay, here's what you're allowed to save, here's what you can't allow to save. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here. We're going to allow you to save three meals worth of food. Because we know that if we don't give you a framework to work in, you're going to end up just putting out the fire. Because it's so overwhelming to see your possessions, chas v'shalom, go up in flames, that you're just going to end up violating Shabbos. I'm going to Abaye, Elohad Desanya. But listen to this. What about that which we learned? Well, it's actually quite fascinating. Nishpolo chavis barosh kagol. We'll say, what happens if you have a barrel of wine? You have a barrel of wine. The barrel of wine on your roof. And what happens? The barrel breaks and the wine is leaking out. So what can you do? Mevi kli umaniach tachteha. You could bring a utensil and place it underneath. So we'll say the image that's being painted over here is the barrel is on the roof. The barrel broke. The wine is dripping down to the ground. You could place a utensil on the ground in order to go ahead and catch the wine. So the Gemara says, "Bilvad shelo yavi kli acher v'yiklot kli acher v'yitzraf." That's only assuming that what? That halacha l'maaseh, you could put one utensil on the ground to catch the falling wine, but you can't go ahead and bring another kli v'yiklot. Yiklot means and catch the wine mid-air. Or v'yitzrof ultimately means what? To go ahead and put another utensil by the edge of the roof to catch the wine as it's flowing down. To which the Gemara says, why not? I don't understand. What's wrong with this? Why, if I have a barrel of wine that breaks, so we'll say, what the Mishnah is saying, you have a barrel of wine that breaks, all you're allowed to do is put one utensil on the ground to catch the wine as it comes to the ground. But you can't bring another utensil to catch it midair, and you can't bring another utensil to put at the edge of the roof. Why not? Hasamai gzeira'ika. What will be the problem over here by catching the wine that Chazal limiting the amount of utensils you can use? Hachinami gezeira shemayavi kli derech reshusaradim. The concern about say is as follows, that if halacha lemaisa, we allow you to catch the wine with an unlimited number of utensils, you may scramble to start finding utensils, and you may come to go ahead and end up carrying a utensil through the Rosh HaRabim in order to save one. I will say, there's an incredible psychological idea that Chazal are espousing over here, which is, people do irrational things when it comes to money. Right? Even rational people. And by the way, this is not an indictment. Right? This is not like, I'm not saying people do crap. I'm saying like, we're all concerned about our possessions because we work hard for our possessions. And when I see myself suffering a loss, so sometimes, again, without even thinking about it, I'm just going to do what I have to do to stem my loss. I'm going to do what I have to do to prevent myself from losing out on hard-earned possessions, hard-earned money. So therefore, the concern is my barrel breaks, the wine is pouring out, I'm out of utensils, right? I've got every pot and pan and glass that I have collecting wine. I need more. What could happen? You may end up running through Rosh Hashanah and grab a utensil and bring a utensil back to the public domain. So therefore, Chazal said, there's a limitation. You can only catch the wine in one utensil that you place on the ground. You can't start placing utensils midair or by the edge of the roof. Gufa, so we'll say, let's analyze this case. Nishpura lo chavis barosh kago. Listen to this. So let's say, we'll say, same case. Your barrel of your wine breaks on your rooftop. Mevi kli umaniach tachta. So we'll say, what can you do? You can bring a utensil, place it on the ground, and allow that utensil on the ground to catch the drip of the wine. As long as you do not bring another utensil, we'll say yiklot means catch the wine mid-air. Yitzraf means place the kli at the edge of the roof to catch the wine coming off. However, we'll say, watch this. Nizdami lo'orchin, aye, but if you have guests, so you need the wine. Maybe kli achar v'kolit, kli achar u'mitzarif. So we'll say, if you have guests, then einachinami, you could bring additional utensils in order to catch wine for your guests. However, the Gemara says, "V'lo yiklot v'achar kach yazmin," but you shouldn't first collect the wine and then invite guests. Rather, "Eli yazmin v'achar kach yiklot." You should have the guests first and then collect the wine afterwards. And as Rav say, what Chazal was saying is, listen, you can bring extra utensils if you have extra people. That's fine. But the guests have to be there before the utensils. In other words, the need must be present before you have the license to bring extra utensils. But you can't first bring extra utensils and then invite the company afterwards. And Abba say you cannot go ahead and engage in harama. Now, harama literally means trickery. What this means is you can't start going ahead and just randomly inviting people as your guests in order to use them as an excuse to collect wine. So my barrel of wine breaks. I know that the halacha allows me to put one utensil on the bottom, but I need more utensils. Say, Reuven, want to come for lunch? And Reuven looks at me, he's like, this guy hasn't said a word to me in 10 years. Right? And suddenly he's inviting me for a spontaneous lunch. Shimon, what are you doing right now? So the Gemara says, you can't do. In other words, you can't go ahead and invite people in a way where it's clear that either they're not going to eat, that you don't really want them, and the only reason you're doing it is so that they give you the license to put out additional utensils. Rabbi Shum, Rabbi Yossi Yehuda Omer Ma'arimin. This is yes, you can. You can engage in this harama. You're allowed to go ahead and invite people, even though what? Even though they're not going to eat and they're not going to drink. In other words, you could go ahead and kind of create. You could invite. Provide this halachic invitation. I say halachic invitation because you're not really inviting the person to eat at the gym. Maybe they ate or they drank already. Or Reuven doesn't drink wine. But it's okay. As long as Reuven is coming, halacha lemaisa, that gives you a license to put out additional utensils to catch the dripping wine. So the Gemara says, Lema b'plug. So both say, so therefore again, you see that halacha lemaisa, Rabbi Yossi, so we have a machlokes. Tanakama indicates that the halacha only allows you to use one utensil to catch wine. And the only additional license you have is if you have company coming. But that company must be legitimate company. On the flip side, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you could even invite a little bit of like made up company, meaning you can invite company just clearly for the sake of putting out additional utensils, even if you know they're not going to drink the wine. So the Gemara Lima Bapluk to Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yishua Kamiflagi. Maybe ultimately, again, the Tanakamo and Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda are arguing about the machlokis over those Rabbi Yishua. Say, listen to this, because what's the machlokis? The Sanya. This is fascinating. Osovia Spinoshanof Labar. Both remember again, there's halacha that says, you're not permitted to shecht a mother and its offspring on the same day. That's Osovia Spino. So watch this case. Let's say a mother and its child fall into a pit on Yom Tov. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ma'alas HaRishon Amnas L'Shochto. So Rabbi Eliezer says, listen, here's what you do. You could help the first one come out of the pit. They both say, now in general, the act of helping an animal out of a pit is, technically speaking, would be a prohibited form of malacha on Yom Tov, unless, of course, you need the animal. Now, the issue is, under normal circumstances, let's say two unrelated animals fall into a pit, no problem. Take them both out. Why? Because they're both fit for shechita. But when the two animals are a mother and a child, they're not both fit for shechita. So what do you do? How do you get the animals out of the pit? So listen to this. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Malas HaRishon Amunas L'Shochto. You bring the first animal out of the pit with the intention to shecht it. V'hasheni Oselo Parnosa B'mkomo B'shol Shelo Yomos. And then the second animal, you just simply maintain it. You feed it in place until Yom Tov is over in order that the animal doesn't die. But Rabbi Eliezer says the license is only to bring out one animal. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Ma'alin Es HaRishon Amunas L'Shochto. Ve'ino Shochto. Umarim umalas hasheni ratzazesh shochit ratzazesh shochit. Rabbi Yishua says, what do? You bring out the first animal. And you bring out the first animal with the intention to what? To shecht it. And then what happens? Once you get the first animal out, you say, you know what? Nah, change it. I don't want to shecht it. I want to shecht that one that's in the pit. And then you bring out the second animal with the intention to shecht it. And then once you have both animals out, you are permitted to decide which animal you want to shecht. So we'll say, so fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yishua about the use of harama, of some false pretext, right, or contrived pretext in order to accomplish a desired ends. So what's it? So the Gemara suggesting maybe it's the same machlokis over here. So Rabbi Eli, right? So the same machlokis here. Your barrel of wine breaks. The halacha allows me to put out one utensil. So, but yet if I'm having company, I could put out additional utensils. So what's the machlokis there? So can I simply invite company who I know are not going to drink wine because they give me the license to go ahead and put out additional utensils? So bepashtos, that machlokis by the barrel is the same machlokis by Osovi Espino, to which the Gemara says, well, say me mai. So actually, not necessarily, can't say compare the machlokis, but I'll tell you why. Dilma ad kan lo kama Rabbi Eliezer hasam de efshar beparnasa. Maybe Rabbi Eliezer doesn't allow you to take the second animal out of the pit. Why? Because you could sustain the second animal inside of the pit. So there's no real loss. In other words, you can't have two animals in the pit. But once you get one out, you could sustain the other one inside of the pit. So there's no need to get it out. But in the case, ultimately, again, of the broken barrel, if you don't do something, you're going to suffer a loss. Furthermore, again, why does Rabbi Yeshua allow you to get both animals out of the pit? Because there's a pain to animals, right? The tzar balichayim. Aval hocha, the leka tzar balichayim lo. And I will say that by the case of the wine, where there's no tzar balichayim, maybe he wouldn't allow you to invite, you know, contrived company. And I will say some ketaina that seeing good wine go to waste is also tzar balichayim, right? Mamish, you know, it's the greatest tzar for the greatest balichayim. But again, the Gemara doesn't entertain that possibility. Obviously, it wasn't such good wine. So therefore, again, the Gemara suggests that halacha lemaisa, the two machloksim are in fact not linked. All right, we'll stop over here for today. But again, just understand what we have over here. The Gemara is giving us a construct. And the reason I'm limited to Muslim Gimel Seudos, even though halacha lamaisa food is not mukta, is because of the fact that halacha lamaisa, we're concerned that if we don't give you a framework, a salvage framework, in the case of fire, that you will come to extinguish the fire. And we see that framework again by Svarim. We now see that framework by food. We begin to see that framework ultimately again by, we see the framework by wine as well. So once we'll stop over here, I will tell you, Mirtz Hashem, tomorrow we're going to get into some beautiful Gemaras regarding Shabbos. So Mirtz Hashem, again, we'll see some beautiful, not really a Garata, but more like Hashkafa on Shabbos. We'll stop over here for today. Also, we'll begin, we'll end this Zoom, and we'll begin Mirtz Hashem Shacharis in the Shul parking lot at 7 a.m., Yashar Koach to everyone.